Hello, it is 2 p.m. in New York, 8 p.m. in Johannesburg, and 1 a.m. in Bangkok. Welcome to the Expat Happy Hour. This is Sunday Schneider Bean from SundayBean.com, and I am a solution-oriented coach and intercultural strategist for individuals and organizations. And I am on a mission to help you adapt and succeed when living abroad and get you through any life transition. Have you ever gone on vacation and when you got back, you felt like you needed a vacation? If you can answer yes to that, then you are not alone. I remember coming back from a family vacation in a gorgeous place of all places, Thailand, and I was exhausted. So it is so important to do family vacations right because we spend our precious time and money, jump into long-haul flights and try to make the best of it. So that is why I'm so happy to have our very special guest, Eric Stoen, with us today on Expat Happy Hour. So if you don't know who Eric Stoen is already, you are going to want to check him out afterwards. He is, now here comes a long list, a travel writer, an award-winning photographer, father of three kids, and he has literally been around the world and back with them. He is on a really special mission to seek out the absolute best travel destinations for families. And one thing I really respect is that he doesn't recommend anything he hasn't tested himself. He's been to over 80 countries, I'm sure it's more since the last time he entered that in his website, and seven continents. And he's featured in prestigious travel publications like Lonely Planet, Travelocity, Outdoor Families Magazine, Yahoo Travel, and he's even the winner of the Condé Nast Traveler Magazine's Photo of the Year. If anyone knows how to do family vacations abroad right, it's Eric. So Eric, welcome to the Expat Happy Hour.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are so happy. So I know that your website, one of the websites you're featured on, is Travel Bubble. So tell us, what is behind a name like that? And what do you do? Share with your our audience exactly how you spend your time.
So several years ago, I was still in healthcare, which is what I had entered basically after graduate school. And I, like you said, I won Condé Nast Traveler's Photo of the Year award, and I used that to go to New York and meet with the Condé Nast Traveler people and see their offices and talk to these travel writers who I had, you know, I had read their stuff for 20 years, and they had inspired all of my travel before and after kids. And being in their offices, I was like, this is so much more interesting than healthcare. I mean, this is where my passions lie, photography and writing and inspiration and family travel. And so a year or so after that, I was a little bit frustrated at work and just all of a sudden quit one day and thought, okay, I'm going to jump full speed into travel writing and see if I can inspire people. I'd always kind of been the go-to person on Facebook for people, for my friends and family when they had travel questions. And the timing was perfect to enter this new world, see how many more people I could reach. And the name itself comes from that Condé Nast Traveler winning. I went to Florence with my family. We won a $25,000 trip to Florence. And they planned all sorts of cool things for us, like pizza making and gelato making and chocolate making and paper making and river cruises and all this stuff. And the very first day or two there, everyone was calling me Babbo, which is basically Italian for dad. And that was 4 years ago, and my kids haven't called me anything but Babbo since. I wouldn't even respond to dad or daddy. It would sound foreign to me. And so it was about a year after that when I switched from healthcare to travel writing, and it was the first thing that popped into my head when I needed a website name. I was like, well, I'm Travel Babbo. I'm Travel Dad, but nobody calls me Dad. So that is where I came from, and for the last couple of years, I've been continuing that mission, obviously able to travel more now that I don't have a desk job. And my kids are in a real school, so we're not homeschooling or anything like that, but we fully take advantage of every school break that we can, maybe pull them out of school about a week a year here and there, or extend their week-long breaks a little bit longer, and travel as far and wide as we can, and really try to find those unique places in the world that people don't think of as kid-friendly and are. I mean, everyone should see the Eiffel Tower, but when you move past that and Venice and the basic sites, there are a lot of amazing places in the world, and obviously everywhere you go, they have kids already, so anywhere can be kid-friendly if you do it right.
Exactly. That's what I think when, you know, we moved to Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, which is in West Africa. And when there were several people I told, and they were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're bringing children there. And yes, you know, there are certain medical precautions you should take, but they actually have kids there, and they do they do make it. We have to back way up. You just said something that is so amazing, like it was just, you know, eating cornflakes. You talked about how you gave up your secure job in healthcare and you left for travel writing. So if anybody has a fantasy of a location independent job, it is, I'm going to get paid to travel, take pictures, and write. I mean, come on. When I was a third grader, I remember saying to myself, I wanted to be a National Geographic photographer. So many people have this fantasy. How did you make the leap without not being scared out of your mind?
I had a few years of savings built up, which I think is important. I think if you talk to anyone who's really successful at whether it's Instagramming or travel writing or photography or anything else, it's a good 4 to 5 year process to really to build up that following, to make those connections, to have the resume and you know have the outlets where you've published your stuff to the point where you're really making decent money doing it. Obviously, there's the enjoyment factor, and I love doing this. Now I get it. Basically, yeah, follow my passions all the time instead of being in a business that I was good at but not passionate about. But no, it's definitely not something that I would encourage people to jump into without savings and without a business plan. I have a business background, and that really kind of helped me early on say, okay, well, where do I want to be in 1 year, in 3 years, in 5 years, and look at it like a business and not just a labor of love, because that's a real easy way to go out of business very quickly.
Exactly.
And need to go back to a different job.
So Eric, just for the audience, I want to recap this, because there's a lot of talk online about location independent businesses. And depending on who you're following online, some people make it sound like easy, fast money, sexy. Here, you know, look at me taking pictures of myself by the pool. You can do it too. And what you've just said, which I wholeheartedly agree with, is you made the leap, but you had a plan. You had not only a business plan, you had a backup plan financially. So you took, everybody who goes to business school knows that at least 3 years for you to be able to cover your costs and try to make a profit when you're doing a small business. So you have a savings to bring you through the uncertainty, also prove yourself, establish your credibility. And you also talked about two things, passion and skills. So a lot of people take the passion and they make the leap without the skills. And that sounds really counterintuitive, but some people do it before they're really professional at it and they don't have the backup plan or the business plan. So you did that all from the beginning. How did you know that was the right step for you to do?
You know, from 18 years in healthcare, you know, I kind of knew that it was who you know and the relationships you forge as much as what you know. And mm-hmm. So I jumped into it almost from a networking perspective, immediately got into some Facebook groups where I was getting really good advice from people and started going to travel conferences and travel blogging conferences, travel writing conferences. And I've probably been to 12 to 15 around the world the last year, 2 years, 2.5 years. I've everything that I've gotten. I'm a brand ambassador for several companies like Travelocity and Universal Orlando. And everything that I've gotten through the people that I've met at these conferences. And one person, Gary Arndt, said it really well a couple of years ago. He's like, you know what? The way that I can tell whether somebody's going to be successful is if I see them at multiple conferences. Because a lot of people go to one conference and then kind of fall off. But when you start seeing the same people at every single conference, they're taking it seriously. And they're looking at it like a business and not just as a way to backpack around Thailand for an extra 6 months or whatever and make a few dollars here and there. But that they're really committed to the networking, to those relationships. And that's really stuck with me. And so I'm going to my sixth TBEX conference next week in Alabama. I'm going to my fourth Afar magazine event in Bermuda this weekend. And it's all just about the people that you're meeting, whether or not anything leads directly to contracts or toward, you know, to being in a publication. Who knows? But all networking is cumulative. And I tell people that from the very start, like, get out there and go to ITB in Berlin and talk to these brands and talk to other travel writers and make as many connections as you can. It works really well.
So what you just said, I think, is brilliant. All networking is cumulative. And we just did a podcast with Mary Jo Boss a week or two ago where we talked about the importance of authentic and effective networking. Not slimy, not sleazy, not graspy, but authentic relationship building. And I think that's something people miss when they're starting their business, that business happens between people. It's not even product-driven businesses are relationship-driven. And so you just said it. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And I would even argue in some contexts, it's who knows you. So that to leverage that and to foster that. And the other thing I heard you say is be willing to invest your time and money in the relationships without expecting a direct return. Because people might say, oh, I went to one conference and I didn't get any business out of it. I'm going to stop. And that's actually really misguided.
Absolutely. Yeah, I bet I went to five or six before I started getting contracts and getting emails from me really wanting to work with me and proactively seeking me out. And I use proactive, but really it was reactive based on my meetings with other people at those brands or people that knew people at different conferences. So absolutely.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea we were going to be talking about location independent business. This is brilliant. So I'm going to, even though that's brilliant, I'm going to take a pause from that a second. I want to get back to why you do what you do. I know that you focus on family travel. There's so many niches and genres. You talk about how on your website that you seek out natural, cultural, and foodie destinations and activities, and that you want your kids to learn as much traveling as they do in the classroom. So tell me, what's the motivation behind there? How did that all get started? So such clarity on the kids aspect.
Good question. I bet part of it has come from taking my kids early on to theme parks, to you know, Disneyland, Disney World, Epcot, whatever, and being in line behind families of seven or nine, and you know that they're spending $5,000-$7,000 for a week at that park. And it's, you know, no offense to Disney, but it's never the happiest place on earth, and you always see kids crying, and you see frustrated parents, you know, who are trying to get their money's worth. And based on my traveling at the time, I know that those families could take their kids to Chile or to Costa Rica and spend half that much money and have a real vacation, and their kids would be just as happy or happier being on the beach or seeing scarlet macaws flying overhead or whatever, you know, seeing hermit crabs rushing by and really seeing how other people live in the world. Like I said, for less money than you're paying for kind of this false experience with false expectations at major theme parks. And I mean, I'm an ambassador for Universal Orlando. I love it. I think there's a place for letting kids be kids and go to theme parks. But absolutely. I mean, there's so many cool opportunities that you can have in the world to just open your kids' eyes. And I mean, you know, talking to you, it's I'm sure we see eye to eye on everything. But your kids, when they have a global perspective and when they're meeting people everywhere that they go and playing with little Filipino kids on a playground in Hong Kong or meeting Italian kids on the beach in Costa Rica or whatever and kind of becoming friends or whatever, those are then their international associations, and it's not media based and it's not headline based
or stereotypes they
exactly.
see in cartoons. And you know what, that's honestly, people think I was crazy when in 2013 I gave up my dream job. I was a head of intercultural management at a very large Swiss organization. I was, I believe, pregnant at the time, or we had a six-month-old. I can't remember. And my son was not even five. And we decided to leave the idyllic Switzerland and move to Ouagadougou. And this was actually before all the political stuff and revolution and all that. We didn't know that was coming, but we gave it up, what we had built. And as an American who worked really hard to recreate myself in Switzerland, learn German, coach and train in another language, I worked really hard to establish myself in Switzerland. And still I said, you know what? I want my kids to see other places on this planet. And I want my kids in 30 years, when they're on the job market, to say, hey, these are my people. I don't care. I'll go to Africa. I'll go to Asia. I'll go to Chile. I want them to see this as a global community. And I knew staying in my safe haven was not going to create that for them. And we took a leap. It was in one leap, right, in a series of leaps across countries. But what I really admire about what you do is that you're based in the United States and you have created a lifestyle which is you there is some effort. You make that leap every, I don't know if it's every year, twice a year, or 10 times a year. I can't really tell based on your website how many times you're actually with your kids on the road. But you do it even more proactively, even more mindfully. Because when we live in a foreign country, then of course you go around and you check it out. But you have to actually leave your comfort zone consciously on a regular basis. I really admire that.
Thanks. Yeah, no, every year I let each one of my kids choose any destination in the world to go with me one-on-one. I started doing that when my oldest daughter was 3 or 4. 4 was her first trip. I asked where she wanted to go, if she could go anywhere in the world. And she had seen the Sydney Opera House on the Wonder Pets cartoon, and she thought that it would be really cool to touch the Sydney Opera House. So she and I flew down to Sydney, and they had a great time in Australia for a week, and she got to feed kangaroos and do all those kind of cliched Australian animal things. But it was great, and so I kept going. So for each one of my kids, we go anywhere that they want to go, and that's been Antarctica, it's been Easter Island, it's kind of sped up. Getting to a lot of these places that, I mean, I don't know when I would have reached Antarctica. I'm sure I would have at some point. But when my daughter at 8 wanted to go, we went. And that is
so beautiful. I mean, listen, you guys, he lets his kids pick anywhere on the planet that is viably safe. And he goes to Antarctica. I mean, what you get like the Dad of the Year award. That is so cool.
Yeah, cool. 3 of our trips are basically chosen by them, and my son, who's 9 now, has always been attracted to remote islands in the world. Like he likes going to Google Maps and zooming all the way out and looking for dots somewhere in the middle of the ocean, and then zooming in and saying, "Okay, I want to go there. I want to go to Palau or Maldives or whatever." So he's always tempted by really crazy hard to get to islands. So we're going to the Maldives in June for his trip. But beyond that, yeah, then other trips are just like, okay, well, what makes sense? You know, it's spring break. We have a week. We don't want to be really jet-lagged and fly all the way to Africa or something like that. So, you know, what is 3 or 4 time zones away? And so this spring break, we went all the way down to the southern tip of South America, to Patagonia and Chile. And yeah, I'm always just kind of, I'm right now staring at a map over my computer monitor. And it's just a matter of, okay, where haven't we gone? What cultures haven't we experience? And I'm by no means trying to check off every country in the world. There will be 100 that I never get to, because I'd rather go back to Italy every single summer for a couple weeks, because we love Italy. But just looking at this and going, okay, well, we haven't been on the Amazon in Brazil. Let's book something like that in the next 2 years, or the Galapagos, or, you know, you name it. So I've never been in Northern Africa, I've been all over Southern Africa, done safaris with the kids, done safaris with friends. But yeah, I've never been up to Egypt or anything else. So it really is. It's just, I guess, while we're not checking things off a list, I'm kind of mentally checking off cultural experiences for the kids.
Right.
So that they can decide in life, like you said, where they want to go. My kids have European passports and American passports, so that they'll have, hopefully Europe still exists when they're in the job market.
But I'm laughing, but it's really not funny. I know.
Exactly. And so, yeah, and beyond that, yeah, so I want them to have the knowledge of where their passions are and what place around the world spoke to their hearts. And I mean, for my daughter, who's 11 now, it's Bali. She's been to Bali the last couple of years on her trips, and she's just passionate about it. Like, she, when I'm there with her, she's emotionally invested in Bali and the culture and the religion, and she just loves it. And that's awesome. And so, I mean, I'll still keep showing her other places, but if she wants to go back to Bali every single year for her annual trip, that's absolutely fine. And I would think that there's a chance that she may go there after she graduates, or she's addicted to falconry in Ireland. We did falconry at Ashford Castle a few months ago, and she has that Irish passport, and she's going to be able to work there if she wants. And she's already been on the website of the Ireland School of Falconry and looking at internships for when she turns like 18 or 20. And so, well, so that's awesome.
It's really showing your children that there are no limits, right? That you can, I mean, if you have the means, if you, with the right mindset, you can get to where you want to go. And I know just from what I've seen on your website, this isn't like, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it isn't like you're getting corporate sponsorship for each and every single trip that you do. It, the way I've understood it, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's also some clever traveling planning that you do to make sure that these trips are feasible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, sometimes hotels will sponsor us or give me a nice media rate, and it helps that being a travel writer now, with U.S. taxes, all of our travels are tax deductible, so it really reduces the costs of anything by about a third. So I don't pretend that doesn't play a part, but no, I mean, to Chile, we used 550,000 United miles on 5 business class tickets. So our flying was free, and I play those mileage games. I am obsessive about traveling, or travel planning, for a full year in advance. I'll kind of sketch things out, figure out, okay, how do we get to this place as, you know, inexpensively as possible? Or we want to see this place. What is the season to go to? What is the shoulder season so that we can fly there and stay there for a lot less money than the people who are going at peak season?
And that's just it's another skill that you're talking about, that if you really want, and this is because I'm a coach, we talk about creating the type of life that you really want to live. And if you want a life, like you've said, where you can take your kids where they want to go, you do the work. You plan in advance. You look at, you know, peak season versus low season, and you track the miles. That's the investment to get that kind of return. You know what I have to say? I have been traveling since, I don't know, 1997 internationally. I haven't had frequent flyer miles until this year, where my husband actually signed me up. Isn't that so bad? Is it really worth it? Because we always travel in such random places. I never thought I would, you know, go the same route enough to accrue miles. Is that bad that I didn't have these miles the whole time?
At least you've started now. But yeah, I mean, you pick an airline alliance, because, you know, you pick Star Alliance with United and Lufthansa in Singapore, or One World with American and some of the others. And once you can really start kind of being loyal to those 20 or so airlines within that alliance, yeah, you can build up mileage fast. But still, right now, I mean, it's never been less expensive to travel. And yeah, peak season, it might be expensive to get from the U.S. to Europe or to Asia. Well, Asia is usually only about $600 from LAX. But once you get over there, I mean, you can fly on all these little low-priced carriers all around Asia, all around Europe. I mean, I think last year we spent $30 a ticket to get from Budapest to Venice. I think it was like $18 a ticket or something crazy when my daughter and I were flying around the world to get from Yogyakarta, Indonesia, over to Bali. I mean, all these tiny little things that where you feel like it's a free flight. And if you're doing a carry-on, you don't have baggage fees. And I've told people for years, well, I'm traveling so much now because it's never going to be this easy or inexpensive to travel again. I mean, who knows what's going to happen around the world? Who knows if there will be a natural disaster, or maybe there's a volcano and all air travel is shut down for a year. Maybe there's some new mosquito-borne virus that really scares people.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
But yeah.
So some of the tips that you've already mentioned is plan ahead, which is obvious, but it's hard when you're sort of caught up in your day to day. But if you really want to make it feasible, plan ahead, look at the shoulder season, so off the peak season, and then don't be afraid to book those low cost carriers, you know, domestically once you get there. So those are already some really good tips for those who are thinking, wait a minute, if he can do it, maybe I can do it. So here's something that I've been thinking about, and I think this is very relevant to people who live international lives, like expats who change countries every 3 to 4 years. You know, I saw an article that you did online around Giraffe Manor in Kenya. And I had seen a picture, I think it came through on a Facebook feed, and I thought, that is staged. That must be like a Hollywood movie. And then when I was looking at your website, I was like, oh my God, that's for real. So for those who are listening, it's literally, it's a manor, like a beautiful bed and breakfast type of place where the giraffes literally will put their heads in the windows while you're having breakfast and you can pass them a biscuit or pet them. It is incredible. It looks like Jumanji, that movie. It's incredible. So my point is, when you give your children these amazing experiences, what do you do when they get home to the everyday life? And how do you keep them grounded so that they don't think that there's something extra special because they get to fly all over around the world?
The funny thing is, I don't think that they think it's special. And sometimes, I mean, like before this trip to Chile, they were all complaining, saying that they were enjoying being home so much that they really didn't feel like getting on another plane and going and doing anything. And we had a great trip. And I've learned to never ask them right when we get home whether it was a good trip, because they always say, no, I like being back home. It usually takes about a month for them to process it and go, okay, well, Africa wasn't that bad. And yeah, we had fun. And okay, I liked this part and this part and this part. But otherwise, they love being at home. They love their school. They love their friends and everything else. So, And I guess I've always felt the same way. I love getting on airplanes and going somewhere new, but I hate getting on airplanes. I hate leaving home because we're not trying to run away from anything. We really enjoy California and our base. So I think that all of these little travel experiences are slowly seeping into my kids' heads and personalities and are creating who they are, kind of changing who they are in ways that I can't even predict. And it's going to be really fun long term to see what they turn into. But right now, I don't know. I like the knowledge that they have. I like that we were watching Amazing Race the last few weeks since the new season started here in the U.S. and that they recognize places in Tanzania and everything that they've been and can relate to it and remember those little sights and sounds and everything else. But otherwise, I think they're pretty darn grounded, and I would hope that their friends and friends' parents agree with that.
Right. That's so great. And I love that, you know, I get that as someone who travels a lot. I get that they crave home and they're looking for their stability, and that they are as excited to get home as they are to go to somewhere interesting. That's definitely a good sign. So here's something that, you know, you talk about, you recommend the best places to go on holiday. And I just wanted to share a really quick story. There was I mentioned in the beginning that we went to Thailand 1 year, and that year we came back from a trip to Thailand, and I think we owed like $120 in the swear jar. There was something going on at that trip where we weren't in our groove. And I think it came from, we were in Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso, and because you have people around you a lot, like staff in your home and around your home, you don't have a lot of privacy. So then we went to Thailand, and then we still have people around. We chose a hotel and not an apartment. So we weren't getting our needs for isolation, you know, an intimate family scenario met. And it wasn't conscious until afterwards. We're like, we love Thailand. Why was it like that? So what I did is, I couldn't believe I was doing this. I was going onto the site, what's it, VRBO, Vacation Rental by Owner. Yep. And it was like 325, you know, destinations around the world. Where do you want to go today? And I typed in, you're going to freak out. I typed in Richardson, Minnesota. And this is like population 485. I just Googled it. And we wanted to go to just a cabin on the lake with nothing. And for us, that was the best vacation. The decor was a disgusting mix of like 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000 all mixed up in one cabin. you know, like the people just kept putting the stuff from their real house into the cabin, but didn't ever, you know, synchronize it. No internet. And we had to drive 25 minutes into town to like get a cup of coffee and greasy eggs. And it was way better than a trip to Thailand. So how do you make the decision? Because it was based on what we needed at the time. How do you make the decision when you're saying this is the best place for family? How do you decide what's the best?
I think that that would all be based around what my kids have absolutely loved. So when we leave that place, did they have an amazing time? Did I feel like whether it is a rental, whether it's a hotel, whether it's a city or a restaurant or anything else, did that really kind of blow us away? Did the staff there just have that kid-friendly vibe where everything was right, where they're filling those glasses of water half full because they know that kids shouldn't be picking up these huge, heavy, filled-to-the-brim glasses of water? Just all of that. Like, okay, did they make our vacation easier? And were there unique experiences? Was there falconry? Was there a cool boat ride that my kids remember? Did they run down sand dunes and have the time of their lives, whether it was simple or complicated or spontaneous or pre-booked or whatever? What would we want to recommend to friends and family as something that their kids are going to like? And so I think that's
so here's
everything on my website.
Here's the criteria. Just to you know, recap the criteria. Did it blow the kids away? Is it something memorable? Was it a unique experience? And did the staff or the people that you're around and spending time with make the experience easier for children? So those are three criteria you can look at when you're planning your own vacation. Is it something that will blow my kids away, or will it be memorable for them? Is it a unique experience? And do the people make it easier? And you can read those things in reviews. You can look for those online. Those are great criteria. Those are really, it goes back to this idea of, you know, when you go on a vacation, you want to relax and you want something memorable. You want it to be something special. So how do you find time just for you and your partner when you're traveling with three kids? Do you get time just the two of you, or is that while they're playing in doing special events, or are you guys always together the whole time when you're on vacation?
I think we're a little unique that we do not try to escape our children at all. I think we both have similar mindsets that our kids are only around for, as they say, 18 summers. You only get 18 summers with your kids, and then they're off into the world. And so, no, honestly, we're like realizing how fleeting this time is. And it's one of those total cliched things everyone tells you, you know, when you're about to have kids, oh, it goes so fast. And you're like, okay, whatever, you know, you can stop saying that. And then it really does. And years fly by. And so, yeah, we like being on vacation with our kids. We really try to create vacations and choose destinations and everything else where we're all going to enjoy it, where there are activities, where there are animals if the kids want to see animals, whatever. So we're all having fun. None of us feel like, oh, it's being dumbed down for the kids, or and we definitely never drag our kids along on adult vacations. We're not going to take them through the Louvre for 5 hours because we've wanted to see the Louvre and you know, it's miserable for them. That's not going to be a happy kid vacation at all. And if they're not happy, we're not happy. So, I would say my wife and I, honestly, we don't try to seek out that time. Our kids have never really liked kids clubs, whether we're on a Disney cruise or at a nice hotel. Yeah, if there's a cool event or the cooking class and they want to do it, great, they can sign up. But otherwise, we're not trying to check them into a kids club for 8 or 9 hours. And I totally get that other families like to operate like that, that the parents, you know, are really stressed from work and need that couple's time or whatever, and their kids are just kind of used to kids clubs or whatever. But we go on vacation as a family and we stick together as a family. So
I love that idea of only 18 summers. Yeah. Don't make me think about that. Oh man, I'm already counting down. So where do you think, you know, we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to know, what do you think? Where do you think most families go wrong when it comes to planning an amazing vacation? What could they do differently that you often see?
I think I do two things that almost sound like opposites, but they're not. I overplan in that if I know that we're going to be in Paris in a year or whatever, and there's one tour that I want or one cooking class or whatever, like I schedule everything way in advance so that, or, you know, especially we've done a couple Disney cruises with the kids, which, you know, have positives and negatives associated with them. But if we're going to be at a small port and it's a town of 5,000 people and there's not much tourism infrastructure there at all, and there's only two tour companies and the guides get booked up immediately, I want to contact those guides a year in advance and get them so that we have the absolute best experience possible. So we're never, you know, having to tag along with 60 other people on a Disney cruise bus and going somewhere and having a really not customized, not kid-friendly adventure. On one hand, we over-plan, but on the other hand, we really try to make the vacations about the kids. And like I said, we never take them on an adult vacation. And we would, mm-hmm. we to some extent, we don't plan the obvious things. I'll just use Paris as an example again. If we're going to Paris, we don't try to see everything or check off every museum, all that stuff, because Paris is always going to be there. And my wife and I can mm-hmm. go back in 18 years, and that can be when we spend 5 hours in Musée d'Orsay or whatever. Right now, it's all about parks and playgrounds and picnics. And making sure that the kids are having fun. And if that means playing Frisbee in a park for an hour, I don't care where in the world we are. I don't feel like that's sacrificing, or a waste of time to be, oh my gosh, you know, did we come all the way to India to just play Frisbee? No, because, you know, I want the kids to have that fun vacation anywhere we are. So I really try to make it all about them and about them having fun. And like I said, if they're having fun, we're having fun.
Exactly. And, you know, another thing that really connects, I think, to coaching is you're not resisting what is. You're basically saying, we have three energetic children who have curiosity and want to be engaged when we're on vacation. We are going to a place which fills up fast. I know one of your tips is to get to a place early before other people so you can actually see it in a more pristine way. And you're basically saying it's worth some thought to think what is. And then plan accordingly so you can really tailor your experience and make the best of it. So that's one takeaway I want our listeners to think about is what can you do to optimize your vacation so that you really make the best of it? Because let's be honest, we spend a lot of money on vacation and you can have a crappy time or you can have an amazing time. And what I'm hearing you say is a little foresight and a little planning can go a long way to really be there, be present with your kids and enjoy what the location has to offer.
Absolutely. And I really minimize the opportunity for anything to go wrong. I mean, when I was a backpacker in college or whatever, yeah, you get into a small town in Norway in the middle of the night or whatever, and you find a place to stay and it's not a big deal and you don't plan anything in advance and you don't know where you're going to be 2 days from now. With kids, mm-hmm. I do not have that mentality. I do not want to end up somewhere and not be able to find a hotel room or rooms. To take a chance that we're going to get that ferry and to not realize that, oh, they fill up fast or whatever. No, I really look at all of those little things. I mean, we're going to Greece this summer again. We loved Naxos, Greece 2 years ago. And so we rebooked kind of the same vacation for a couple of weeks in Naxos this summer, same hotel. We're excited to see a lot of the vendors who we got to know on this little Greek island over the course of a couple of weeks there. But we did some things wrong last time, and we weren't able to get the ferry schedule that we wanted. We never got over to the little island of Paros next door because the ferries either they just weren't scheduled right or we didn't book them 6 months in advance. And the flights to get there, we didn't even get optimal flights because we tried 6 months in advance and we realized, wow, tour companies have booked those a year in advance. So this time we did mm-hmm. it all better and really planned in advance. And I felt kind of silly, a year before booking ferry tickets and going, well, are we going to want the 2 p.m. departure or the 3 p.m. departure? But you know, now that I have all that stuff, I'm not going to sweat a thing and I know it's going to go really well. I hope it's going to go really well. But yeah.
And I hear this thing as well of don't be afraid to go back to the same place twice. And even if it didn't go well the first time, to say, hey, we want to do this differently. I think there's a lot of people who feel pressure of like there's so many places to see in the world. You can't, you know, God forbid if you go back to another place again. And you're saying, why not? You can really enjoy it. Like your daughter loves to go to Bali. I mean, who can blame her? It's a great destination. So for people who are listening, it's obvious that this is, you know, you are absolutely, Eric, the go-to person for family travel. That's why you do what you do. On top of excellent advice, you have amazing photography. You guys, he's got eye candy all over the place around these beautiful destinations. In German, they call it Wanderlust. It makes you want to get out and go see something new when you look at his website. Also, you have this great page of resources saying, hey, I don't do it all. I do this. Here's some other people who do these other things. And I think that is really valuable in and of itself. So if people want to know where to find you, where should they go?
My website's the best place to start. Just travelbabbo.com, travelbabbo.com. Then really, Instagram is probably my favorite social network, but I'm everywhere: Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and it's Travel Babbo everywhere.
Okay, great. So, and can you leave us with one final tip for our listeners who really want to make the most of their vacation time with their family? What's the one last word of wisdom you can leave them with?
Just reiterating what I said, make your trips all about the kids. Anything that you're planning, think through it from the kid perspective, and whether that is the best way to go, the best decision to make. For flights, nonstop flights are worth the extra expense, because you have less of an opportunity of luggage getting lost, of a missed connection, of anything else going wrong. We like early morning flights because those are rarely delayed. It's the afternoon flights where we've had problems, so we don't do afternoon flights anymore. So think through every little element and think, what is the easiest? You know, when you get into a destination, the train into town might be $5 cheaper, but if a taxi is just going to be so much easier and just getting you straight to your hotel on time and not lugging your luggage for six blocks, you know, over cobblestone streets or whatever, spend a little bit of extra money and do the easiest possible thing, and your kids are going to have a much better trip.
Great. And I know what some of you are thinking. I know you're thinking, you guys, when I'm on vacation with my kids, I want some time where I can just switch off and have a gin and tonic or a glass of wine and talk to my partner. And we all know that happy, tired kids who've been busy all day long go to bed, and that also leaves you some time for yourself as a couple when they zonk out in the room. So, Eric, it has been such an amazing pleasure. I didn't expect us to talk about all the advice that you had for a location-independent business, hearing about the courage and planning that you had when you made the leap from healthcare to travel writing, and all of these wonderful tips from how we can really be more mindful and pragmatic to optimize our vacation with family. So thank you so much for being part of Expat Happy Hour. I really appreciated it.
Oh, absolutely. The pleasure was all mine. This was a really fun interview.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. You guys, how amazing is this guy? I mean, he has got his priorities so clear for him. Family is absolutely a priority when he travels. And he asks his four-year-old where they can go and lets them decide. Talk about following the imagination of a child and embracing where they're at the moment. This is really a remarkable story. I hope that you take away the tips from him today. Being mindful around the experience you want to create for your family, making sure that it's easy so you can relax, and that you do something unique that you're going to remember for a lifetime. So really, really so interesting. Thank you for listening to Expat Happy Hour today. This is Sunday Bean, and today's episode has really shed light on how you can make the most of your precious time and money when you want to get away with your family and really enjoy your vacation. if you want to check out more beyond the travel and arrangements, and you want to go a little bit further around what you should do and avoid to really make the experience going abroad on vacation or even going back home the best you can possibly do, don't hesitate to check out on my blog, Expat Vacations. So sundaybean.com under the category Expat Vacation, because taking a few minutes to be mindful about how you spend your time and money could avoid a train wreck of a vacation that I know all of us have had before. And I believe that you deserve to feel like you are truly rested after vacation and you've made a connection with your family rather than just wishing you had one more vacation. Take care, you guys, and enjoy and bon voyage for your next vacation.